the spinner rack, all you new you maniacs, here at season 4 of the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new universe. We are your hosts,
Andy with Justice number 23, and
Steven with a backup story and universe news. Whew, I'm tired already. 1986, the new universe was launched as an imprint for Marvel Comics, dedicated to a more grounded and less fantastic approach to comics and world building. The original idea was the world outside your window, with real-time progress and greater realism. After the first year, some books were canceled, though we've been seeing their characters in other places, and the remaining books have gotten consistent creative teams, their origins were streamlined, and they are becoming more action-oriented as the new universe becomes increasingly militarized in the wake of the world-shaking disaster, The Pit. Since then, we have seen the U.S. government drafting paranormals and possibly gearing up for a war.
With at least if you believe the advertising.
Advertisement hasn't let me wrong yet. Except when they said The Pit was good. I don't. Never mind. With our podcast, you can follow along with us each week as we go through each comic in the order they hit the spinner rack, or just check out individual comics if you already have a favorite. We have a season 4 trivia challenge, definitely-ish, now available.
No way, I uploaded it. It's on there.
Oh, all right. On our website, kickersinc.com. And you can also find us over on X at Kickers Inc., where you can be updated on our upcoming episodes, which issues we're looking at. This week, we also have a special request from one of our new universe fans. I know it's hard to find your emails in the voluminous mailbag we dig through each week, but I have heard your requests. And going out to a Josh D, I preserve your anonymity there. We have a request which aligns with our focus this week, Justice number 23. So here we go.
Way to build it up.
Okay. I am the heart of justice. Let's try it again.
Again?
I am the heart of justice. One more. I am the heart of justice. Thank you. And scene. All right, everybody. How you doing?
Put that audio, turn it into my ringtone for you.
Exactly. I want to see justice popping up every time we call you now.
Or we could do like a dubstep mix of it. I am. I'll set my kid on that. He's got the audio program.
I want it like the Cosby Show, jamming on the one. Jamming on the one. Theo met Stevie Wonder, maybe. Alrighty. This week, yes, we do get back to Mystery Man Justice. John Tenson is a paranormal who wields the sword and shield of justice. He brings his black and white fight against evil to paranormals who misuse their powers. Or does he?
Justice number 23. What happens when a man viewed as a god must destroy his followers? I'm guessing the followers get destroyed. When that man is Justice and the Acolytes are the Justice Brigade, the answer is all-out war. Ramifications is written by Peter David, penciled by Lee Weeks, inked by Mike Gustavich.
All right.
Wait, is the war coming already? Like, is this the war? All-out war? I feel like I'm not ready.
What was it? The weekly 52 series from DC a few years ago, where it was like, it covered a missing year, and they were like, oh, and there's like World War 3 or 4 happened in there. They put it off to like the like very last week.
Yeah, and it ended up being like 3 issues or something. It just seemed like a big wet fart or something. Yeah, it's just
Yes.
warrant.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah, the if there's a war coming, let's hope it's more covers more than one book, and it's not just Justice versus the Justice Brigade, which would be kind of confusing, I'm guessing. Whose
Yeah.
side are you on? Justices?
If it was justice
Yeah.
versus everyone, though, I'm sold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
We will also be discussing Universe News, and we have a backup story.
right.
We'll s save details for later.
Okay, no sneak peek.
Yes.
Justice 23, cover. September 1988 came out for Realsies June 7th, 1988. And well, Justice is finally not on drugs, right? So
It's two or three issues.
so Justice had been on his one-man mission to punish renegade and bad paranormals, and also was kind of in the background stalking his daughter. Then the NSC had been searching for him and trying to kind of like sneakily recruit him. He got caught by the police at the Pit Aid concert, and they ended up drugging him, which made him go crazy and hallucinate that he was still in the Winterlands, blow up a little bit of town, give Colonel Mac Browning a little bit of comeuppance. But
I'll
eventually,
show you what a civilian can do.
and then eventually got grabbed by the NSC, including his daughter proper. And that's kind of where we leave off today. We had also seen the Justice Brigade in the same city with a flamethrower,
They were, yeah, looking for him, hoping to join him or something.
Yeah, part of like the whole group, everyone's looking for justice. And that's where we leave off. All right, what's going to happen with the Justice Brigade? Our cover is not Justice on the cover, but Justice Brigade number, Justice Brigade guy, somebody, right? We don't really know. So we'd seen these guys before. He got a tank on his back, flamethrower, kind of like a, Salvation Army version of the Justice Lightning Bolt shirt. And some version of like a ski mask on, and the cover blurb is, "If you play with the Justice Brigade, you're gonna get burned," which is delightfully cheesy. And there's flames all over in the background and stuff, so it's on point, fits the theme. But yeah, so opening up the book, we actually start with the police captain from earlier who was running the police district that Justice was blowing holes in. And so he's driving home. He's like, "I can't believe it's finally over. When I became a cop and then a precinct captain, I never thought I'd have days like the past couple. And I never thought the words, 'There's no justice,' would have such a pleasant sound." Hee hee. Well, because he's tired of dealing with justice. So yeah, he pulls up to his house, strolls in with a briefcase. He's like, "Ah, well, not my problem anymore. What? Oh Lord." So he's shocked to find, well, a couple members of the Justice Brigade, with their flamethrowers and their ski masks, and his wife and kids tied up in the living room with flamethrowers pointed at them. So and the Justice
Boyd, did you take these kids out again?
He's like, "You seem to have found your deity, have you, Captain Chafin? It so happens we're looking for ours. So tell me, where is justice?" And I always like in the last couple, especially Peter David does great like panel scene transitions where the text kind of flows. So we go cut to DC, presumably, where someone's saying, "Anyone know where justice is?" So yeah, that's Terrence Updike, NSC guy who had kind of re recruited and was rounding up paranormals himself. He runs into Kleenex. He says, "Kleenex, have you seen where justice went?" He's just kind of looking around, sniffing, sneezes, And kind of points, he went that away. All right, thank you. We finally find out what Kleenex's deal is too in this issue. So it's like, I mean, it wasn't the most exciting of reveals, but it's an interesting one. We cut to Justice, who's in the shooting gallery with his old-fashioned revolver. We got like a cool, nice full-page piece of art from Lee Weeks, and finally the title of the book, Ramifications. Which you could honestly title just about any Justice comic, probably, because there's always something going on. But so yeah, Updike's yelling at him through the PA system. He's like, "Are you in there? Are you Justice?"
Justice.
But that's him saying Justice,
Oh,
though.
yeah.
Updike wouldn't sound like that.
Justice.
Justice. It's more like the Flintstones boss, right? Where are
It's
you?
steamed hams, but it's Justice and Terrence Updike of the NSC.
Skinner.
It's it's, no, I said steamed clams. No, I.
It's more of a
Anyway, go.
Euclid thing. So, like, Justice is firing art on target. Updike makes fun of his poor aim, I guess. Says John Tenson's marksmanship was legendary when you were here with the Justice Department. It's like, John Tenson is dead, Updike. He's like, really? Well, if it is, it's not because you shot him. Because his
Boom.
aim's not that
I
great.
gotta insert the gif of the like teenager, like ex all his friends are excited by his.
Oh, snap.
Aww.
So Justice points a finger and uses his sword power and just roasts the target at that point. It's this bullseye. Notably, Justice John Tenson here is looking pretty normal, wearing some jeans and a turtleneck, so like regular blue clothing. Maybe a little bit of a give in from all the letters page arguing about whether people liked his outfit or not, the purple rain kind of trench coat look.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, these first pages are just like it's like police procedural, very like, yeah, kind of brought down to very world outside your window. So I
Right.
don't know. I mean, it does make a case for the visual interest that his funky outfit provides.
Yeah. Well, he changes into it later. Leaving in the hallway, he runs into Miriam Morse, who was also kind of recruited. Yeah, she's the tiny woman who can visualize the past a little bit. And she basically like runs away from him. She's like, Tenson, just stay away, okay? Basically she's terrified of him and kind of skitters away in the hallway. Justice is like, so I give playback the creeps. And Updike's like, what, are you surprised? She's seen what you've done, the murders, and she doesn't understand you. To be honest, neither do I. And he leads him into another room. Is this a Justice narration box? He says, after all that I've witnessed, my air of detachment is quite impregnable, or so I believe. Nevertheless, as I step through the door, I gasp involuntarily and say, oh my God. Right, so.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Slight difference from the oh Lord that we got from the police captain. And. There's an interesting little scene here. So Updike introduces him to Creeping Crud, name of another presumably paranormal. This guy who we don't get to see him too well, but he looks kind of like brown and rotten, and he's sitting next to a plant that presumably he killed. He says, I wouldn't suggest you shake hands, otherwise you'll catch what Crud has. However, his body constantly replenishes itself. Yours won't. You'll be dead in seconds. Justice raises his hand. He's like, you poor creature, would you like me to end your torment? Just getting ready to vaporize this guy you just met. He's like, whoa, whoa, hold it. No one's ending anything. And he kind of pulls him out of the room and scolds him. It's like, all you think about is killing and about destruction. There's other answers to problems. You can't go on like this. And now that you're with the National Security Council, you won't go on. I'm calling the shots, capiche? You can imagine Justice might not like that. So basically just grabs him by the shirt collar, says, "You do not threaten me," and basically slams him up against the wall. It's like, "Do not order me, and do not for one moment think you have power over me. I answer to a higher authority than yours." And we get a big close up in his face. Updike is kind of takes it in stride, and he's kind of probably saved by Tenzin's daughter Angela showing up. She's like, "Daddy, what's going on?" And Updike kind of plays it off. It's like, "We're just having a conference." He's just like, "Angela, you look well." It's like, "You too, Dad. Mr. Updike said he thought you were recovered enough for us to get together. I was in the waiting area, and Kleenex, I mean, Mr. Pasco brought me in." It's like, "Then let's talk." We get a kind of an interesting interlude from there. We cut to Embassy Row. There's somebody getting out of a limo, and we get a word balloon from off panel. It says, "Excuse me, sir, about the Palestinian in question. I'd like you to know my name is Eisenstein, and I want justice." And it's one of the Justice Brigade members, surprising, I don't know, a stand-in for Yasser Arafat, maybe? Is that what the guy's name from way back when? But
That's yeah, I can't it's not like super on model, but he's got that headgear that's
is sort of famous for.
popular, yeah, but it's I'm not sure if Palestine has an embassy. It's so that's a little weird, but it's as we're recording this, the Palestinian question remains
Murky.
controversial?
Yeah. Well,
No comment.
I don't know that the Israelis have flamethrowers, but it's not great for Palestinians at this point. But yeah, in the comic, the guy's surprised. The security guards kind of jump in front, but you can't really shield a flamethrower like you can a bullet. So, presumably all three of these guys get roasted by the Justice Brigade, who are now, just full on vigilante. You cut back to Justice, coming up to talk to Angela. Says, "As I enter the conference room, I see Angela watching out the window, staring at passing fire trucks and ambulances. I wonder where they are heading, but it is no concern of mine. Angela, however, is." It's kind of a weird little interlude. "Do you still like Italian ices?"
You still sleep with stuffed animals? I brought you a teddy.
Well, as it turns out, that actually kind of does work. But so we get kind of like distanced, estranged dad John Tenson now, as he takes a walk with Angela and starts talking. Starts to kind of make some small talk. She's wondering where the money he gave her for her college tuition came from. And he's kind of vague about it. And she's like, "That's all you tell me, and about the things you did, the killing people." He's like, "I've had to kill people before, sometimes as a narc. I didn't enjoy it de then, and I don't now. It's part of the job." They kind of continue talking a little bit.
Why being a narc is considered so high in society.
Respect of your peers, right?
Ooh, he's a narc.
She's like, "They say you're crazy, Dad. No offense." He's like, "None taken. Do I seem crazy to you?" She's kind to him and says, "You seem removed even more than after mom died. Like you've separated yourself emotionally and physically. You won't even touch me or hold my hand." Keeping in mind in the like the information page about Tenzin, they kind of talked about how like his mind was in fact kind of messed up by the dream world scenario. So he definitely did not exactly come back the same. She's kind of, "They call you the justice killer. How could you do it?" And he tries to change the subject about, "Your Italian ice is melting." And she yells at him, "I don't care about the ice. Stop changing the subject. How could you do it? And don't tell me it's like when you were a narc, because it's not. The government was telling you what to do, so it was okay." He says, "I answer to a higher voice than that now, Angela." Again, which is interesting, is he seems to have this higher power thing going on. We get a little bit more from that later. But you know, she gives him the right axe, you know, kind of keeps laying into him, but they get interrupted by two presumably NSC guys who run up and say, you know, there's been an incident. Justice, tell me you didn't do it. Were you anywhere near Embassy Row? So they're thinking Justice might have fried the Palestinian and his bodyguards. And she's like, no, he's been with me all day. So they
So
take.
Chauncey is like update's assistant or something. He kind of
Yeah.
just pops in the corners of panels, so you never really see much of him.
I didn't even bother writing him in my notes. He's kind of like super minor character, I guess.
He'll
Chauncey
have
and
to like
nameless guy.
he'll have to like turn on Justice and bring them all down for us to really notice him.
Yeah, so they kind of go their separate ways. So I guess Chauncey, we'll name him.
Oh, I'm not Chauncey's big fan here. Don't make me out to be like the Chauncey guy. Okay. I'm not going to cosplay as Chauncey to next year, so anyway.
Well, you're just wearing a suit, I guess it would be pretty
Yes.
easy.
You don't get the reference. What's wrong with you? Yeah.
Right, so he walks off with Justice and leaves Kleenex with Angela. Notably, Kleenex starts sneezing as soon as he gets close to these guys again. And Justice asks, he's like, by the way, I see that Kleenex is a paranormal, but aside from him, his impressive sneezing fits, I'm not certain what his power is. And he says, his sneezing fits are his power. He's a paranormal detector. He's allergic to them. Paranormals make him sneeze. So he's got like a much crappier version of Bloodhound's power, basically. Notably, though, right? So, like, of course, then he's going to come up and start sneezing when he's next to Justice, right? But he's also still sneezing, hanging out with Angela, right?
Suspicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, the yeah, it seems like yeah, you've got a couple of these. You got Bloodhound. I think I'm missing one. Justice himself can see auras, so he can tell when people are paranormal.
Yeah.
But the yeah, it's a little I was trying to think like does that necessarily make sense? Because he would be Would he be detecting himself, or is he like just exempt from him, his own whatever?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But okay, fair enough. Kleenex is a paranormal.
Right. But particularly, I mean, it's definitely probably useless in combat at this point, is what we're finding, right? Anyway, we cut to a man on fire holding a TV. Okay.
Feels like an MTV reference, but I don't remember a video like that. I don't
Right.
know.
Some kind of weird version of that 1984 Apple ad or something. I don't know, but it's holding out a big old CRT running in on fire, with the Justice Brigade right there saying, "Don't you know theft is bad?" And then a police car zooming up on them. So the police officer responds, sprays the guy down with the fire extinguisher and starts chasing after the Justice Brigade. So we get a little narration where he's kind of like back at the precinct, you know, talking about what's going on, where he chases the guy down to the end of an alleyway, where the Justice Brigade member says, "We're on the same side. I can't hurt you." It's like, "We only want justice, the same as our God Justice does. We've done nothing wrong, but I can't let you capture me." And the officer's like, "Those are your only options. Your only two options, fella." And the guy says, "No, there is a third." Holds the flamethrower directly into his own face and immolates himself, if we're being vocabulicious here. So he just sets himself on fire. The police officer's narration says he didn't even scream. He seemed happy to have done it. It was the sickest thing I'd ever seen. And then I realized that the fuel in his tank was going to go, so I got out of the alley. So like you get a big boom in the end. So yikes, okay. These guys are a little off. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we cut to page 13. And Updike's reporting to Justice. Basically, they're starting to figure out the Justice Brigade, right? There's all these nuts dressed up like you talking about justice. You know, there's been 8 and then now 11 incidences. So they're all over town, presumably killing people, because that seems to be their only thing. There's a funny little bit where Tenzin says, if they're that fanatical, they might make good NSC operatives. And Updike's like, well, that's not a bad, I was joking. It's like, oh, you card. It's a little silly. But yeah, so Justice is like, obviously they've modeled themselves on me or what they think is me. It's my responsibility to put an end to this. Angela would say that one Justice fanatic is enough. We don't need a horde of them. So like, where are you off to get into my work clothes and then to find them? Shouldn't be difficult. They think like me after all, and I've been thinking like me for quite some time.
I like that, but that was like my favorite line in this issue, I
Is
think.
I don't know if I like it or if it's just mega cheesy or just both.
It can be both, sure.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So then we get sort of an even more blatant connection. So Tenzin's daughter Angela is walking with Kleenex and they're chatting. And he's still like sneezing like crazy. So Angela the paranormal is what we're pointing to. So they chat a little bit, and past care of Kleenex is like, Miss Tenzin, wanna take in a movie sometime? And he interrupts himself sneezing, and she basically laughs at him. It's like, you can't be serious. It's like, no, really, my treat. She's like, okay, fine, but only if we sit on opposite sides of the theater. She's like, okay, I guess that means no hand holding, huh? She gave him more credit than I would have, I guess, but I'm
Is it?
surprised he would want to go since she's presumably making him sneeze anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he as drawn is age indeterminate, so how appropriate this is kind of left as like, I
Right.
guess okay, so.
Right. He could be 20s, he could be 35. It's really hard to say. But probably at least workplace unprofessional.
That's yeah, also, yeah.
NSC operative brings in young girl, if college student, and like tries to date. Oh well.
Okay.
Anyway, so Justice, we cut back to him.
Here's another good one. I am not generally noted for my levity.
Yeah. But he walks up on a Justice member. Says, I believe you've been looking for me. He's like, and you knew I'd be here? And he's like, of course, where better than at the home of the 9 greatest justices in the country? So it's the Supreme Court, presumably. I don't know.
You're looking for justice in Washington, D.C. Let me make a few jokes first because this is, yeah,
Even Burger? I don't know.
it's honestly hard to remember a time when the Supreme Court was viewed as like the, oh, yeah, well, the Supreme Court. Yes, sir, Mr.
I'm
Justice,
sure it was at
sir.
some point.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
The Justice Brigade guy takes Justice back to an empty office building, basically, and talks about how like it's for rent, but nobody's rented it out yet, so they're just kind of squatting there. And he seems kind of like impressed by it, which is kind of funny. But the whole squad of guys is there, including a little kid holding a teddy bear. So they bring him in. He's like, he's here, Justice is here. And they're like, Ten Hut, and they all salute. It's like, sir, indeed, this is an honor. Like, the miracle, praise the miracle. It's like, my name is Galt, sir. We've been waiting for you to come lead us ever since we witnessed the miracle. And Justice is like, a child? You drag a child into this? And he's like, who are you? He's like, we had been in the millennia, sir, in Philadelphia. You remember it, don't you? Right. And so that was the issue where they had that kind of crazed cult of, regular people, basically, like suburban families, following the paranormal who had kind of created their cult, but Justice defeated him. right? Kind of showing off his powers and thus kind of, I guess, becoming their god.
Yeah, it was issue 19 or 20. It was after the pit, but I think he forcibly disbanded that group who were just sort of shaking people down for instead of upholding justice.
Yeah, like they
So
beat up a writer and like who had kind of like infiltrated them to tell the story.
right.
Didn't work out well.
Yeah, the millennia, I don't know. Then
They seem to have
I
lost all their female members.
oh yeah. There was also the end of last issue. I just was thinking there was those sort of hobos that were standing around the campfire or whatever. I
Yeah.
don't see any of them in the crowd either. So they didn't get drafted into the
Well, they were
Justice
gonna like
Brigade.
throw all those like guns and ammo that they had gathered into the fire, so they probably killed themselves. That
Possibly,
was my thought,
but
at least.
Galt, I remember was the name of one of the characters before, like one of
Yeah,
the
when we saw
millenniums.
them, they were like trying to figure out the name. They're like Justice League, Justice Society, Justice Inc.
And as I think we noted before, Galt seems to be like a reference to Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, and it's kind of a reversal here. In that book, Galt was always talking about how you have to be an individual, not look up to people, things like that. Whereas here, he's the sort of the antagonists in that book who are always who really get to a point where they're like, we need you to lead us, and they're like ready to do anything if the guy will just start throwing orders around. So anyway.
So, I mean, Galt kind of explains, they were on this holy mission. With the Justice Brigade again, like just Tenson's kind of taken aback by the kid. He's like, "That's my boy Doug, next generation of the Justice Brigade." Although he won't be carrying that bear around much longer, right, Doug? Oh my God, he's like,
He is, I don't know, five maybe, I
yeah, it looks
suppose.
really young, but wearing the ski mask of the Justice Brigade too. He's like, "This is madness. You must disband immediately. You've only done what you and they're like, disband, we've only done what you were doing, making judgments, executing justice." And he's like, "It's different. Mine's a holy mission to judge paranormals. I've been given power as proof." He's like, "But that's why we have taken power and followed your example, right?" Justice is kind of freaking out. This can't be happening, and it won't anymore. This stops, and he takes Galt, kind of slams him on the table. He's like, "I'm stopping this right now. You'll put an end to the Justice Brigade once and for all. Do you hear me? Once and for all." Right? So language is important here. I was like, but all we live for is our mission. All we live for is your approval. It's like, oh, geez. It's like, we want to be part. We want you to lead us. He says, "Consider this a warning. I have judged you and found you wanting. I want a complete cessation of your activities. Forget. Forever, the Justice Brigade must cease to exist. Is that understood?" And they all kind of look at him. And he gives him an even bigger growly one. He's like, "Is that understood?" And they're all like, "Oh, yes, sir." And you can see him, the whole squad looking dejected, taking off their masks. Just Tenzin walks out. Notably, when he did come in, he was wearing his purple justice outfit. He's like, "The end ceased to exist," he said. "You heard him, people. We have no choice. If any of you want to leave, I'll understand." And like three dudes walk away. I was like, "Anyone else know?" And instruments of justice on the table. So they all throw their flamethrowers all together on one table. Tenzin's walking out of the building. He's like, "Idiots. Perhaps I was too easy on them. Then again, having their deity show up and verbally crucify them was doubtlessly traumatic." And he's like, "I was certainly clear enough." He's like, "Cease to exist. And since they take my every word as gospel, that should wait. What if they take me literally?" And then we get the boom. So the building just blows up. Justice is shocked, basically just standing there looking as the flames are coming out the window. The police start showing up. ridiculously fast, actually, or maybe he was just standing there watching it for a long time. It's not super clear. He's like, police respond, fire trucks come. Jess is just standing there, staring in disbelief. We get the firefighter asking about survivors. You see us, the gurney, the stretcher wheeling by with the teddy bear on it, which is the kid. He's like, none, not
Oh.
even this little guy. Poor kid. Makes you wonder, what's the point of it all? So, yeah, that's a little rough.
This is the second time in just a handful of issues where justice has killed a kid, or a kid has been killed around justice.
Yeah, that's true. Just hitting you in the feels. So, Justice walks off. He's kind of walking through the city silently, going back to an apartment. Not sure exactly if it's Angela's apartment or just where they've got them set up. But there's a presumably police officer or somebody lounging on the couch.
I say Kleenex.
Is it?
He
Yeah.
sniffs at the
Oh, he
beginning.
does the sniff, yeah. He's like, looking for your daughter. She wanted to turn in early. Second floor, door on the right. Justice walks up, so again, kind of back to sad absentee dad mode as he just killed a bunch of people again, which was what Angela was harshing on him for. Well, I guess he didn't quite kill them, but pretty close. So he walks in on her sleeping in her bed. Notably, there is a teddy bear on the nightstand there, kind of next to the bed. Kind of sits on the edge, puts his hand on her head. She's kind of sleeping, but kind of responds with a little smile. And Justice is pretty crushed, right? So he does the hand on his face, imagining that kid with the teddy bear as he's with his kid, who's thankfully alive. He's like, oh God, what have I done? And that's the end of this story. Quite an end, I guess. Yeah, like that's really, that is not how I thought all out war with the Justice Brigade was gonna go.
It's
That's
all out
for
war.
sure.
Ooh.
Yeah,
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you about that. Dark as heck there, man.
yes, it was.
Yeah, I don't know what to like. We'll do a little discussion for this story before we move on. I mean, it's it feels like something you're trying to say, but I'm not quite sure, what it is. Is it, when I get something like this, it's a little bit more, it seems less personal and more like, I'm not going to say political so much as like, sort of analyzing the idea of like leaders and followers or religious fanatics or something. I can't
Yeah,
quite.
I kind of imagine it as it's kind of like a chance for Tenzin to finally have to kind of face what he's been doing, right? So like he's been following around his daughter, but couldn't really bring himself to talk to her. When he finally does, then she's kind of like, "What have you been doing? You've just been out there killing people, like you're my dad, and you're out there just murdering folks." And he's still kind of like digging in, right? So he's still thinking, like, well, this is my mission. This is who I am. I'm Justice, right? If somebody needs to be taken out, I'm the guy to do it. And then, so he's finally kind of seeing the dark side of what he's been doing, right? So like he's developed a crowd, right? Throughout his mission, he's got people who are, doing sort of a worse, meaner, vigilante version of what he's doing, and he kind of has to face that. Again, still tough guy. Listen to me, I'm Justice. But then, the explosion, the kid's dying, right? He's really has to, I'm presuming this is him having to kind of like face up to what he's been doing, and then maybe like a slight change in direction from the, one man killing machine, watch out if you cause trouble kind of thing. So it's moving away from the black and white justice, perhaps.
Yeah, I was just thinking as we were going through it, there was like the I'm not like super familiar with it, so but my I'd read of the early days of the Punisher, where that he had like a breakdown at some point and was like shooting jaywalkers and such. So like, I don't know, like it wasn't like when he was first introduced, but they're kind of, and he's like ambiguous at one at the be beginning, and then they're sort of maybe like another writer uses him also as a guest or something, and like kind of ramps him up as like just crazy guy, and then they have to kind of dial that back later as to make sort of more mainstream him. So Justice himself is, of course, had some similarities to the Punisher. So I don't know if this is like a, as you say, you're trying to, you know, explore options of what justice is and what he does, and you're kind of narrowing it down by comparison to these people who are worse and crazier, I guess. Part of that does make sense. I'm not really sure. I mean, we do get a lot of good sort of structural development. These guys have been built up over several issues. But there's something about Justice's response that it kind of feels like just, you know, going back to normal isn't really an option either. You know what I mean? And so my kind of reading of this was almost that, like, Justice, yeah, misread them, but like he is kind of, yeah, he accepts this sort of mission that he thinks is holy, but then he doesn't sort of take the next step of being, you know, here's an army offering itself to me. Maybe I should do something positive with them, if you know what I mean. You
Get the
just sort of,
disciples going.
you know, scatter everyone. Don't stop dressing like me. You're making me look bad. Isn't like, you know, here's the leader we've been looking for. And in some ways, I mean, that seems almost like a possibility for justice. You know what I mean? Like this sort of one-on-one thing.
And really, like, it was a kind of a bunch of murderers too, right? Like, if anything, like, maybe he shouldn't have left them alone.
They were totally like, yeah, always sort of off. Yeah, not they had like no sense of proportion. So I understand they're beyond just like we think justice is cool. They're like, yeah, dangerous, crazy people. I'm worried about that police captain in the very first scene, like his family's all tied up, you
Oh,
know.
right. Jeez. Like, is he
I hope.
alive? I kind of assumed he was, but I didn't think about it that hard.
So hopefully, I don't know, some of these
I think, like, since they respected the police officer, like, they were unwilling to kill the guy who kind of caught the one on the street, then presumably, like, to them, him and his family are innocent and kind of on their side. They're just, means to an end. So I'm saying he's alive.
Oh yeah, okay. I feel better. I'll be able to sleep tonight.
Nukin or the pits?
It's a bit of a borderline nuking for me. I mean, and I
Really?
enjoy it okay, but the various sort of I don't know. It feels like, you know, you're kind of holding Justice himself back in some ways with this, like, and I don't want to overdo it with you know, where is he going from here? But I'll give it like, yeah, like a B, enjoyable. But I, you know, even for the strong feels I get when like another dead kid hits the page.
It's like I don't even know you anymore. I'd say easy nukin. I was thinking more like a B plus. Like, I was really happy reading it. So no issues for me on this one. It was definitely fun. And the
Still 100%
previous issue of DP7, which we forgot to rate, was definitely
nuking.
nukin.
We're
It's a good
going back through all
streak.
our old scripts and in fact the podcast themselves and inserting nukin into. Let's head on over to the next page. The backup story, which is surprisingly to me, Psi-Force. Psi-Force?
Yeah, okay, why not?
Or at least Psi-Force's healer and shockwave. Yeah, the young women who we hadn't seen in three or four, three issues maybe, since the showdown in San Diego. Issue 19. Okay. I'll keep like forgetting the more I keep trying to drag it out. We've got a sort of an outdoor scene of kind of a urban setting and a large building that is presumably as the narration box says, Bethesda Naval Hospital outside of Washington, D.C., March 8th, 1988. And I did l look this up on Google. It was maybe sort of more set in the woods at the time. It's sort of off on its own. But
Someone didn't do their reference work.
it was more difficult back then. And I'm not sure it's Javier Salteras on pencils, who may not be in the country. I'm not sure. So yeah, Fabian Nissi is a writer, Jeff Albrecht and Mark McKenna on inks. We've got the Psi-Force logo, and the title story is Healing Time. And so it's Bethesda Naval Hospital, March 8th. So a few weeks ago, by most of the story's progression. And it says, since the mandatory military draft was reinstated a month ago, one wing of this hospital has been set aside to heal the wounds of any paranormals who are injured resisting the call to duty. Jeez. And that we have a sort of a splash of a guy, obviously a paranormal. He's doing sort of a whirlwind thing, and he's got a knife in both hands. And he's sort of whipping around, and there's a couple of soldiers maybe on the ground cut, and a group of, hospital personnel sort of up against the wall, staying away from him, but talking to him. And he's yelling, "I'm not going anywhere, you understand? Stay back, Ballad. I swear I'll cut you." Yes, it's our old friend, Dr. Lucian Ballad, or possibly Tullius. I don't know. He's
Possibly a werewolf.
I only wish.
Like
Mr.
they took
Pippin.
30 minutes to get to the spinning blade guy.
Mr. Pippin, please don't do this. And can the guy continues, "I won't go into the army." The other soldiers there are not just ready to shoot him, but they're kind of insulted by that. "What, do you think he's too good or something?" And they take a bead on him with their rifle, one of them, and "I have him in my sights, Dr. Ballad. Please step back." Ballad rushes to the foreground. "No, wait. He can't maintain this spinning motion for long. He'll be too dizzy in a few minutes." He maybe
Minutes.
gets cut under his nose.
Minutes are a long time, man.
Yeah. Soldier tells him, "Enough's enough. Get away from him, doctor." And suddenly he's the Pippin, the whirling guy. "Hey, what's going on?" Ballad doesn't know. But Pippin jumps up to the ceiling and sort of thumps himself loudly against it. Ballad is just shocked. And the guy drops back down to the floor. And then we have a door open and a woman yelling at everyone. "Now will everyone shut up? Stassi is trying to sleep." The door slams and Ballad says, "Catherine? Was that Ling, the cat telekinetic girl?" It's one of the soldiers. She's back inside that room and Stassi is there in bed, and she's like in a patient bed. And she's, "Kathy, what was all the commotion?" "Don't worry about it, Stas. That idiot Pippin was acting up again. Was anyone hurt?" "Well, he ended up beating the crud out of the ceiling and floor with his back, but other than that, I have to help him." "No!
Well, there was also a couple of soldiers laying in pools of blood, but
That's true. We don't kind of get back to that. Kathy is laying into her. You've been healing everybody else for too long. Look at how weak you've gotten. Ever since Potiphar shot me through the chest in January. Psi Force 19? Okay, there we go. The paramedics were working on me, but I would have died if it weren't for you. They said you were already totally wasted. They said your fingers got cut off and you healed them back on. Yes, I was very weak, but I couldn't watch you die. I can't ignore anyone who needs my help. I just thank God every day that I was able to help you in time. And so we see these little flashbacks of what had happened to them. She continues, I slept for 3 days after that, and I've never been as strong as I was before that horrible night. But I can't stop helping any of these poor people who need my help. So Ballad has opened the door. Anastasia, we need your help. Kathy's not having it. Back off, Ballad. Can't you let her rest a little? Look how tired she is. Kathy, please. No, Stas, this guy's killing you, and I won't let him. Ballad really wags the finger on this panel.
Literally.
Young lady, thanks to your irresponsible use of your parability, Pippin is in serious shape. Now we need Anastasia to stabilize his condition until we can get him to surgery.
Important to heal the guy that was just killing everybody. Come on, Ballad.
Oh, stick it. I'm so sick and tired of hearing all this garbage. Kathy pushes Ballad and a nurse and a guard who had come in up against the wall. You're just a bunch of users, Ballad. All you stinking government pimps treating paranormals like we were your little power toys. Catherine, don't do this. Don't abuse your powers like this. Wow.
Dr. Lecture, jeez.
Yeah. Judge Judy is
Stop trying to defend and protect your only friend.
Stassi is like, Kathy, he's right. Let them go. Stas, they're going to keep using you, keep picking you apart with their machines. They'll keep doing it until they find out what makes you tick or until they kill you. Stassi replies, but while they're using me, I'm using them. I'm saving lives. It's what I was meant to do. Please let me do what I have to do.
Worst panel in the comic, as I you might also add.
In
It's
terms of
kind of hard to tell
draftsmanship.
apart. Like, I'm a little better at it having looked at it a couple times, but like the same hospital long shirt and like Kathy's hair has kind of grown out from what we were used to a little bit. So like they look very similar.
Yeah, they
You
didn't
can
do
just
any like racial stuff with Ling, so
It's just curly hair or no curly hair, and that's our only difference.
yeah, it could be. I mean, Solteris did some good work in a couple of issues.
Guessing this was a little
Spitfire.
rushed, yeah.
So yeah. So they drop the Kathy drops the doctor and guards, and as Stassi goes out in a wheelchair, yeesh, she's telling them, "You're asking me to stand back and watch them kill you little by little. How can I do that? I love you. You're my only friend." And Ballad maybe is, "No, Catherine, we're asking her to heal, not hurt. Sure, heal them even if it hurts her. Some choice. Sometimes, child." Ouch. "The choice is between two evils. What do you do then? Think about it." Oh, I'll think about it, Ballard, with an R misspelled on the last page. "I just don't think you'll much like the choice I make. The end for now. The story continues in Psi-Force number 24 on sale in June."
Which is an odd choice, right? Since Psi Force is currently being published, it seems like that would be a bit that you wouldn't want someone who was reading Psi Force to miss, but.
This is confusing to me. Yeah. I can only think that they wanted to have sort of more build up before the big showdown in DC comes next issue.
It's a nice way to kind of like, hey, check out what's going on in here, but
I mean, cross promotion is fine, but it's not really connected to justice. So you're kind of
What the heck's Dr. Ballad doing running like a paranormal, ER ward or something right now?
Ballad is a psychiatrist. He's not an ER doctor. Yeah. I can only assume it's something to do with his longtime experience with paranormals or paranormality, but it's he comes off pretty, use Stassi, even though she's, like an iPhone whose battery is drained.
Especially because he was always pretty careful. He was always trying to keep Keith really safe, right? Like, don't do this. Don't go into the dream. It's not safe. And then Keith would be the Remsen Nightmask would be the one that was kind of going off and, going rogue to make a difference kind of thing. So Dr. Ballad, maybe it is Tullius, the evil twin.
Makes as much sense as anything. It's concerning for the future because they have said several times someone's going to die in the next issue of Psi-Force.
Oh, crap. So. That's right. Yeah. Maybe it's Dr. Ballad. And I'd be like, okay. That would be a nice fake out.
It would.
Or the Skipper. He's got it coming.
Wouldn't mind there either. It's a, like I say, they're trying to, if it's just, how about we have a backup story from a different book each month in each regular book? Yeah, that would actually work fine. I don't know.
Yeah. They had been kind of like focusing on minor characters and such. So I guess they kind of did that by having Dr. Ballad come back, but
yeah, I do enjoy
really,
he
wasn't
that.
Really the point of the story. So
yeah, I enjoy the, seeing what else is going on around the new universe, but it's dark cloud ahead is
again though without Lita grounding the team, man. Like Remsen's kind of turned into a kind of a turd, right? And now Dr. Ballad is, seems like a government tool, right? We need her to show up and like smack both of them and like, what have you been doing?
Petty is off somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah.
Picking pockets or something. I don't know. Everyone's
on the streets. Cripes.
Oh, you got to blame me just because I'm a girl in a wheelchair? I don't think so. let's pop over to Universe News, since both of those stories, I think, went rather quickly. Before, we also have next issue, and it's a cover with Justice getting... It looks like when Spidey would fight the Sandman, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a big like fist coming out of the ground. Maybe made out of the ground. Maybe it's sand. Maybe it's psychic force. I don't know.
Yeah, and so there's a person who's, I guess he's faced off with, and this fist force comes out. And that's all we got for next issue.
Getting clobbered.
We've got a... the monthly New Universe promo is a paranormal who can change the world, but not a diaper.
Okay. I imagine that's Justice, like one of those. Like
he was a very poor father.
When all the action heroes started doing like silly comedy movies, like Kindergarten Cop or something.
Justice.
The space baby's on there. So yeah, it's DP7, picture of Lenore, Psi-Force, picture of Thomas Boyd, Justice with Tenzin on it, and then Starbrand with space baby. So who knows?
Yeah, Justice is the only one who's a father that we... I can change a diaper. I just won't.
There's no justice in this diaper changing world.
We have on sale this month the other books that we already covered, and next week's book we'll talk about in a second. But before that, the Universe News again has the official timeline of the new universe, and we get July 26th, 7th, and 8th, which covers characters from Psi-Force and DP7. getting their activating their powers. Philip Nolan Voigt is already taking over the sanitarium in Wisconsin and renaming it the clinic. That took him 5 days. I appreciate that, Moxie.
Man of action.
And we see that Ken Connell, riding his motorcycle, is contacted by the old man and given the Star Brand. That's on July 27th.
Yeah, do we get Myron's last name for the first time though in this? Is that news? Myron Goldberg?
I did not notice that even.
Yeah, Connell flies to the home of his friend Myron Goldberg, a psychiatrist in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania.
I'm gonna say it was the first time. I'd have to check my notes though, but they didn't bold Br Myron, so.
I like the Connell then flies to his friend Maddie Felix's house where he rests. If I don't remember all the details of Star Brand 1, but when he went to hang out with the duck, it was generally not to rest.
Again, it's been retconned to be Maddie Felix, not Debbie Fix.
Right, and they were just pillow fighting or something. I don't know.
She was stretching on his motorcycle at some point.
The last one is actually, well, for only me probably and almost nobody else, I thought it was the most interesting part because you get while quarterbacking in his first game since acquiring his paranormal powers, Jack Magnaconti injures Dasher Corbin by throwing the football to him. Corbin is then hospitalized with several broken ribs. Magnaconti realizes that he's using his strength too much, so he plays the rest of the game carefully monitoring his throws. His team, the New York Smashers, goes on to defeat the Troy Haymakers,
What?
35-17. After the game, the team visits Corbin in the hospital. And that was not in a comic book. But hey, we got another team for the league. That brings us up to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams, an odd number, which means there's got to be another one.
All right.
So yeah, the
The
New
hunt
Yorker's
continues.
news has given us two new teams, the Boston Battlers and the Troy Haymakers. So rock on.
Yeah, we all the first issue of Kickers Inc. kind of burned through a long kind of time period, so it was I didn't go back and check like how where this was in the issue or something, but these first when he first gets his power, then he plays a few games before he decides to form Kickers Inc. So
Right.
it'll probably take a little while. So maybe we'll have a few more games there.
I'm hopeful. We still need to know what the team name is for Pittsburgh and Denver. So we just have the city. But
We have the thing I'm like most disappointed in, the and winners of the right event. Several is Mackie here. Several months ago, they asked the loyal New You readers to help us in the naming of the letters pages for Justice, Psi-Force, and Star Brand.
I love that this bothers you so much.
They promised us that was like,
The new universe is different. We don't
the
have
letter column outside our
silly
window.
names.
The
Letters.
Justice Letters page will now be called The Verdict. Thanks to Chris Ballew of Knoxville, Tennessee. You take the next one.
I give that one a C. Psi-Force letters page will be henceforth known as Signposts, Sign, posts. Matthew Middleton of Brisbane, Australia. And I give that one a C too.
Too many silent letters in that name, I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
And Letters to Star Brand has been officially changed by popular demand to Brand News, thanks to five people: John Cavano, Benicia, California; Aaron Curtis, Gold Hill, Oregon; Anthony DeMoria, Philadelphia, PA; Terry Jones, Ainsworth, British Columbia; and David McNear, Jerseyville, Illinois. If any of you are still out there and still big New Universe fans, please let us know.
That would be cool. And show us your full-size autograph copy of the letters page that you won if you still got it, right? That'd be kind of cool.
Absolutely.
So
So
somebody from the New Universe fan page would be contacting you to try and buy it, I imagine. Not us, but somebody.
John Byrne had just published a fiction novel called Fear Book, which I did look up and could not find on Amazon.
Oh,
So
interesting.
I'm not sure if they changed the name at some point in production, or you especially since they folded Comixology into Amazon. Good luck searching for things in there that aren't his million comic books, you know?
Yeah, good point. Interestingly, it says, by the way, Fear Book is not only recommended for those strong of heart, but for mature readers only. John has put some naughty bits in it. Literally in the book. Oh, gross. That's not how you sign the book, John.
Ew. We finish
Gross.
up with a profile on Tom Palmer, who we have seen do some finishes on the Star Brand. He's also working on the Avengers around this time.
Okay.
He's, I don't know, hardworking artist. He says his hobbies are, learning more about his pens that he uses for inking.
Yeah, got a
He painted in
dog.
art
He grew
school.
up close to Howard Mackey.
It's let me see, like Sam Kennison, Larry Bud Melman, a David Letterman character, Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, we just blew up Ronald Reagan, so.
You got a dinosaur book from Walt Simonson. Nice.
It's probably a fun story there.
And one thing I'd like the world to know about me, I tend to be slightly ambiguous about my private life. Okay. So, yeah,
Maybe
we
we
have
should have
a.
interviewed somebody else than Palmer. Come on. Somebody who's willing to share a little bit more.
I want to get to know the real you, Palmer. I'm just a guy. I do ink. That's all I know.
I do like
Anyway.
his drawing of himself where he's like chained to the wall inking something. So, yeah,
Yeah, I
great
think
working conditions in the
it's like he's
bullpen.
blotted ink all over the place with that one. And yeah, it's a nice he says his influences are a couple of guys who I think worked for Mad Magazine, so maybe he likes kind of a cartoony style as well. But for me, it's always inking always sounds like that would be like lower pressure than being a penciler, but it would almost maybe it would be worse because you're the risk of you screwing up someone else's art.
Yeah.
I mean, like the guys who did Jim Lee art and at Marvel and then Image, Wildstorm, like every page you're working on is like thousands of dollars worth of original art.
That's a good
And
point.
I don't know.
But yeah, also, like, as deadlines get weird, right? Then, you've got the artist is behind, or like he sends you a bunch of pages at the last minute, and then you've got to ink them all even more last minute. It's like, ah.
Thanks. Yeah. Hard to say how at some of these the work lifestyle is like. We do. Yeah, we've got a like torn out from a newspaper headline: President assassination attempt fails in Atlanta, Georgia, which is what we saw in the draft out a few weeks ago now. By the way, the back cover of this issue and this month. Speedball, the masked Marvel, is starting up, which I think I'd heard was at least discussed as a new universe title
Okay,
originally.
maybe.
But it is by Steve Ditko, Roger Stern, and Jackson Guise.
Juice,
Guise.
goo
And
ice.
Speedball has definitely been around ever since, so good for him.
Yeah.
Oh, any other thoughts on our issues today?
I don't know. I think it's another solid issue. Things are moving forward. We kind of see where things are going, to a degree at least. And I've been happy with the direction so far, so.
Yeah, the new universe has been, I mean, in ter the as a reader experience, it has kicked it up a notch. I think we were enjoying, the first year and a half, okay, but the accelerated pace and everything does make for, a good reading experience too.
Yeah.
Some of the directions have been a little dark, or
True.
something. We've lost some characters we enjoyed, but they're making an effort to entertain us. So, I can kind of feel that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we don't have like Toxic Avenger version of Jenny Swenson down the line and we get her back to normal, but so she can join the all lady team, but.
There we go. I was gonna call the ladies from Psi-Force the Femme Force, but that's actually a comic book that exists
Yeah.
already. So,
Just like the Now universe doesn't work because there was a company that was Now Comics, right? So many things.
well then, I guess that'll do it for this week's episode. Next time, the new, I guess not now, universe checks in on our former flagship. The Star Brand, number 15.
Yeah, Star Brand 15. Ken Connell, the first human to possess the Star Brand. Okay. Wait, that's not even right, is it?
The old man
With
is
the old man,
supposedly,
right? Because he was supposed to have been human. Yeah. Okay. Nice going, guys. Ken Connell, the first human to possess the Star Brand, confronts his son, and the reunion is not happy. Written and penciled by John Byrne, inked by Tom Palmer. Okay.
Well,
Also, side note, he confronted his son last issue.
last issue, yeah, I went back and looked at the promo for that, and it was like Sins of the Father, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it wasn't just like copied from there, but it definitely seems like it's pointing us at that story. So we'll see.
Yeah. My expectations are rock bottom, but we will still make a fun podcast episode out of it.
Yeah, the whatever the covers for on sale this month, it's a flying baby attacks a bush or something. A bramble?
Yeah, pretty much.
Blackberry bushes that we used to have in Oregon. I don't
Yeah.
know. This till then, you can still find us on kickersinc.com. And you can always drop us a line at newuniversepodcast@gmail.com. This has been the voice of the new universe, and we will see you back at the spinner rack.
It's your universe, idiot.
It was only supposed to make a buzzing noise.
Poor kid. Makes you wonder, you know, what's the point of it all?
I guess that means no hand holding, huh?